The following message was given by Dale Hampton on January 4, 1958, in San Diego, California.
Glad to see the growth that has taken place in this church. I'd like to tell you about the Fresno church, since I'm the minister that goes up there most of the time. We are having, it's fallen off some the past few weeks, and then it grows up again. We'd had around 82 a few weeks ago that were there, and I don't know how many are here. I don't believe it's quite that many. I'm not very good at just making an estimation that quickly or that way, but there are quite a few here, and San Diego Church has certainly grown a lot in the past few years. Very nice to see some of those of you here that I have known for a few years, and then also some of you that I hope I will get better acquainted with in these next few years. Now, this is the last Sabbath, I think, that all of the various ministers in the churches scattered out around the country will be with their local congregations. And beginning tonight and tomorrow, they'll all be leaving to come to Pasadena. And we're holding the annual conference during the vacation that we have. The world's just finished its Christmas vacation. We're getting ready to begin ours, not a Christmas vacation, but our mid-year vacation between semesters there at school. We have 2 weeks coming up, and they will all be there, all those from Chicago and from down in South Texas and up north in Washington and Oregon and back in Colorado and Kansas and so on. And I wanted to mention one thing before I begin, and you can write this down if you want to, that we're going to have those conferences. We have a number of things to discuss, and I think that you should realize that you, as the body of Jesus Christ, should be praying that God will bring out the right topics for us to discuss, that we can help you in clearing up anything that's not quite clear, that we're not quite sure of, that we don't know the answer to, points of prophecy, points of doctrine, things on which we give you, things, you know, and advice during the year and how to live and apply these things into your lives, that you'll pray that God will cause us to bring the right subjects up and to discuss them and lead us and guide us. He always has in the past, but your prayers help. They really do. You can see a number of people who are in the school board of our schools that were not ministers that said that they had never attended one of these ministerial conferences before. And then last year and 2 years ago, I remember that Mr. Torrance, who was the teacher, you know, at the school, was there when we were deciding whether or not we should have church schools and teach our children in our own schools. And at first we were all against it. We decided, no, we shouldn't. But little by little, God's Holy Spirit just took a hold of us, and by the end we could plainly see that it was a responsibility and it was something that we had to do. And I know he made the remark after that meeting that he'd never seen an evidence of God's Holy Spirit just taking hold of a group of men like that and absolutely changing a decision that we'd almost arrived at. But we do hope that we have your prayers behind us. It avails no small amount, but a great deal when these things do come up. And I hope you'll remember that now the next couple of weeks and remember to pray about it daily. Well, now today we have, I think, a pleasant surprise. I don't know if it comes as a surprise to you or not, but we have decided that others who have been working up through God's church, two older men married and with families, would begin to give sermonettes. This is a training ground, and especially here in San Diego and in Fresno, where these men can learn. They are learning, and they're learning to grow and advance their potentiality for serving you and others elsewhere in the future in God's work. And today, for the first time, we're going to have Mr. Dale Hampton give us a sermonette. I'm very thankful that God has given him this opportunity. I know he is too, and so are you, I hope, and that God will continue to grow. The harvest is plenteous, and the laborers are few, and we need more men that can do this kind of thing, and it can help you and help other people in other churches. We could have a church of 65 people tomorrow, or today, rather, not tomorrow, in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, if we had a minister back there, but we don't have anyone to send. We just don't have the ministers, you know, to send around. That will be our next church. There is a great need, and we do have to grow. These are something I think all of you can remember me when I began preaching some of my first sermons. It's been a good few years ago now. Well, 5 years ago, but some of you were there about 5 years ago and heard me preach some of my first sermons. I hope I've grown the past 5 years. Something's wrong if I haven't. Well, now we're going to have Dale Hampton, so I'll turn it over to him for the sermonette.
Thank you, Mr. Armstrong. I was down here about a year and a half ago visiting with this church with Mr. Norman Smith, and at that time I hadn't entered Ambassador College yet, and I didn't dream that I would be back here again in so short a time to speak to you people from this point of view. The thing that I would like to talk about today is prayer. What results do you expect from prayer? And when you pray, do you really expect something to happen when you get down on your knees? Do you really expect something is going to come of it? Or are you even convinced that you should pray? Well, after the Feast of Tabernacles, which I think the most of us attended, and hearing Mr. Raymond McNair's sermon, we should realize that we should pray and the value of it. Now, the ministers all tell us today that we ought to pray and pray more, that we would have more faith and more of the things that we need if we did pray more. Now, the ministers aren't the only ones that have said this. In Luke, the 18th chapter, and in the first verse, "And he spoke a parable unto this end, that men ought to always pray and not to faint." Now, the Diaglot has this a little better. It says, "And he spoke a parable unto them, unto this end, to show that they ought to pray continually and not to be weary." Not to grow weary in your prayers, but keep at it, in season and out of season, as the Apostle Paul said. Now, this parable here is about an unrighteous judge, which brings to my mind a particular situation that we've had in the Pasadena church, which I suppose that most of you have heard about. In the second verse, Christ is saying, "There was in a city a judge which feared not God, and neither regarded man." Evidently, this judge had a rather high position because he wasn't afraid of God. Of course, he was ignorant there because he wasn't afraid of God. He should have feared God. But neither did he regard any man. That means he had authority. He wasn't afraid of any of the men in the city. And there was a widow in that city, and she came unto him saying, "Avenge me of mine adversary." And he would not for a while. He didn't do it right away. But afterward he said within himself, "Though I fear not God, nor regard man, yet because this widow troubles me, I will avenge her, lest by her continual coming she weary me." That means she just keep coming back to him and asking him for this thing. Now, this case that comes to my mind is a woman that had to separate from her husband when she came into the church because of a divorce and a remarriage problem. And her husband wanted the children. Well, in the first place, he wanted to throw her in an insane asylum because of her religion. She was taken and thrown in jail, and while in jail, or in a prison cell, he took her children away from her and kept them from her. And when she was finally released, this judge finally released her, not because of her religion or anything, but because of a technicality. She was released from this trial. Then, when she got out, her husband had taken her children off someplace where she didn't know where they were, nor anything about them. But after going to court or going to see the judge about it, while she learned his presence, and the judge had to come up in court as to whether who would have the children, her or her husband. And the judge finally, just yesterday, through this told her that she would take the children and that he didn't want to hear any more about religion in this case. Just forget religion. That was all out. He was just like this judge. He did not regard God in any way. He wouldn't have any religion in his court at all in that case. But rather, he judged it on the merits of the civil law. Now, in the sixth verse, Christ goes ahead and says, "Hear what the unjust judge says." Did you hear what he said? "Because of this continual coming, he did answer this woman." And God is not unjust, as we'll see here in the next verse. "And shall not God avenge his own elect, which cry?" Now, this word "cry," when searched into the original Greek, is B-O-A-O, boaho, which means to shout for help or in a tumultuous, noisy way. That means to really have your heart into your prayers. In other words, to really cry out to him night and day, though he bear along with us, with them. showing that he will bear long with you. He will not answer you immediately. Now then, we all seem to have a problem of finding a place to pray in our homes. And I can appreciate this problem. As Mr. Armstrong told you, I have a wife and two children of my own. The way that I've solved this problem is to rise up early in the morning before anyone else gets up, then go as far as I can from the bedrooms and use the opportunity then, and also the last thing at night. Now, how to pray, as far as how to pray when you find this private place, many of us seem to, well, I wouldn't say many of us, I don't know how many of us here, but I know when I first started, I would usually get in a very comfortable position and sometimes fold my arms and put my head over on my arms, and if you do that, you're going to occasionally find yourself sound asleep before you finish your praying. And of course we know that God's not going to hear such a prayer as that. But as the Apostle Paul said in 1 Timothy 2:8, I will, therefore, that men everywhere, lifting up holy hands, men pray everywhere, lifting up holy hands without wrath and doubting. He meant to lift up your hands toward heaven and cry out to God with your whole heart in your prayers. Now, God isn't impressed by you making a bunch of gestures or by you making a show of emotions. But I would like to know any of you that have something that you really want to get over to someone that you're in earnest about and you really want to show them that can keep out the gestures. They just come out whenever you really want to express yourself. The same thing is with God. If you rend your heart in your prayers, you will naturally, gestures are going to come forth. And it's kind of hard to go to sleep if your hands are up in the air. At least you can put your heart more heartily into your prayer. Now then, Mr. Meredith suggested in our one of our Bible classes that we ought to pray at an hour and a half a day. I know Mr. Raymond McNair said a half an hour. We ought to set that as a goal so we could really accomplish it. But Mr. Meredith said an hour and a half we ought to be praying. And he brought out the fact that if we did pray that long, that we were going to be tired. If you're really putting your heart in your prayers that long, an hour and a half a day, you're going to be weary. It's going to wear you out at first, at least. Well, now I tried this myself. I took that suggestion. I thought, well, I'll try this. And I prayed an hour and a half a day for 7 days straight. I had to miss a few meals, breakfast and lunch, but I got in that time nevertheless. But in that week, you know what the results were of that praying for that long? All that was visible was I was tired. That's all that I could see. It was the result of it. I was just worn out from it. It was really a pressing thing. Well, I didn't stop, nevertheless, from that, but went on and prayed the rest of this month. I cut it down an hour a day so that I could go ahead with my studies. I wouldn't be too cross with my family. And at the end of that month, then things really began to happen. Results of that praying. The ministers came to me and told me that I was going to have the opportunity to begin to speak and in this capacity. And not only that, there are a couple of men here, I think, could verify that there are some results to much praying. That's Mr. Jackson and Mr. Fram, who have recently been ordained into God's service, into His work. And I think these men will verify the fact that though God bear long with us, He does hear us, and He does give us an answer. Now then, as far as us having our prayers answered, when we get down on our knees and pray daily, and we're to pray daily for God's work, ask the help for it. When we get up from the prayer, we don't see any results. We don't know what has happened as a result of that prayer. But I'd like to read a letter here, which will let you know that your prayers have been answered. This is from a lady in Colorado. I happen to work in the mailroom, the reason I come across this letter and happen to see it. Enclosed is our tithes and offerings. I was so happy this morning, this very morning, it's dated December the 30th, when my husband, an unbeliever, her husband was an unbeliever. He didn't have any religion, and especially not in the truth. Told me to send in $350 to the church. Now that, brethren, is an answer to our prayers, that $350. When you get off of your knees of a morning in prayer, you think of this. You just feel in faith and confidence that God someplace has moved on the heart and the mind of someone to send in this money that they wouldn't ordinarily do. It's just an answer of our prayers. That's what this $350 into God's work amounts to. Is that your prayers, your individual prayers. When you get up of a morning, you can have the faith, or after you've prayed, whether it's in the morning or the evening. You should have that confidence, that feeling of faith, that God has moved on someone's heart in this nation who wouldn't ordinarily have given his money to this work. Now there's one specific case, the one fellow I'd like to mention that writes in continually to the work, and he's against it. He's against everything Mr. Armstrong says, and he even uses some curse words in his letter. That's how far he's away from religion. Yet that man sends money into the work, sends at least $20 each time. And one time he had a rather obtrusive letter that we sent his money back to him, you know, showing that we didn't want that kind of money. So it came right back in the airmail letter and said, keep this money. He says, it's not mine. He says, I'm giving it to you. But in that very same letter, he berated Mr. Armstrong in every way he could think of for what he preached. Now, why did that man give his money to that work? Can you answer that question? Well, I can. God moved on that man's heart and caused him to do it because of your prayers. Because you pray night and morning that God will stir the hearts and the minds of people that are able to give their money, and he does it. That is an answer. This man doesn't want to, yet he does it. He just has to. And that's the way that God is financing his work these days. And in James 5, the 16th verse, the very last part of it, this is the thing that we ought to rest our assurance on. That Jesus Christ inspired James here to write, the effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. And when you can know that your prayers are availing much, and I've given you a couple little instances today that will help you have more assurance that your prayers are availing much. You can rest assured now, when you've really accomplished something in your prayer, when you've really put your heart into it, that God has answered that prayer and that He will answer it.
This message is provided by the Bible Study website at address www.biblestudy.org and Barnabas Ministries. Bible Study. You have questions, the Bible has answers. Message introduction and closing by Dave Williams, digitizing and editing by Alan Ruth, and post-production by Mike Summers.